Hiring isn't just about finding someone willing to take the job. You need the right person with the right background who can move your business forward. If you want candidates who truly match what you're looking for, trust Indeed Sponsored Jobs. With Indeed Sponsored Jobs, your post stands out to quality candidates who actually fit the role. According to Indeed data, 90% are more likely to be hired and trusted by 1.6 million companies. Spend more time interviewing candidates who check all your boxes. Less stress, less time, more results. Now, with Indeed Sponsored Jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help get your job the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/arts. Just go to Indeed.com/arts right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/arts. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Do it the right way with Indeed.
This is Notes from a Native Daughter. I am Sol Daniela. My guest is Rina Valentin, an artist, an entrepreneur, a host, television personality, and a powerhouse. And I'm delighted that you're giving me this time. Thank you.
No, thank you. You forgot one part.
Which was?
The most important.
Which was?
Mom.
You're a mother.
Yes.
That is the most important part. Oh, qué linda. What's your daughter's name?
Her name is Charmvida.
Charmvida.
Well, it's two names. That's her first and middle, but we actually have everyone call her by that. Both names, Charmvida. And she's 8 years old. I deliberately named her Charmvida so that her life would be affirmed.
That's so beautiful. And is she sparkly?
She's very sparkly. And she also has the choice to call herself Sivida as she gets older in life.
And why? How did that come about? A flexible name.
Well, I thought about, well, you know, when she gets older, I don't know, she's going to think Charm is too cute. And, you know, what if she becomes a lawyer or, you know, some powerhouse executive so she can just be Sivida.
That's beautiful.
Yeah, it was kind of really, really, really thought out.
But that's deep. Does she get it?
She does because she represents it. I was deliberate, as is what I opened up with, in just making sure that her name, as being chanted on a regular basis, would manifest a charmed life for her. And so far, she's pretty much even my good luck charm.
Yeah.
She's played a really serious, like, transformational role in my life. I mean, of course, becoming a mom is transformational, but just in my whole being, it's totally transformed.
Makes you better?
Absolutely. You know, and becoming a mom was my biggest fear in life, right? Because I always enjoyed just the freedom, and I have a gypsy spirit of just kind of getting up and going. And if I wanted to go relocate to another state, I did, and I've done. And so I always felt like if I had a child, I would be, you know, kind of like strapped down and crippled in a sense, and I never thought I would be a mom. And when I did become pregnant, which was later in life, I had a late pregnancy, it was even at that point still questionable for me, although it was almost like my last opportunity in a sense. I mean, I'm sure if I wanted to try again, which I'm not interested in doing, it was complicated. I had a complicated pregnancy. And then once she came out, and I've watched her develop and blossom into the beautiful human being that she is, she's a wonderful soul. I feel like I've been so blessed to be her guide, which is what I consider myself. I consider myself to be her guide.
Wow, that's so sweet. I'm not a mother, but I can tell that she's very important to you.
She is. I never thought that my world would revolve around someone like it does for her. And I mean, they say that happens when you become a mom, but my connection to her is so profound that her and I mean, you know,
for lack of,
we speak telepathically. Like, yeah, we're definitely a unit. And I know that's, you know, to some people it's like, what do you mean? And I'm like, yeah, I can communicate with her without her. And she says it to me, and she's only 8 years old. She's like, oh, Mom, I got the invisible string. That's what she calls it, the invisible string.
And how does she relate to your work, to talk about you as a professional?
Well, I would like to say that it's definitely empowering her because she's quite the strong individual already at 8. She was practically born in the studio, in a sense. You know, I work at BronxNet, and mm-hmm. I've been on set for the past 11 years. And I want to say the only time I really took a break was for my 3 months maternity leave. And I had to go back to work. And so they allowed me to bring her to the studio with me, and they accommodated me, and they bought her a playpen. And so since she's been 3 months old, she's been in the studio, and we shoot live mm-hmm. every Friday morning. And interesting enough, she always remained quiet while we were on air. I mean, technically, she's been there. She was there way before she was born because she was in my belly, and I worked up until I went into labor. But she pretty much grew up in a television studio.
Wow, incredible.
And so with that, she's also surrounded by a lot of artists. Yeah, she's surrounded by adults, and she's also surrounded by a lot of artists. Her dad is a professional percussionist. His name is Eric Conde. So she has the musician aspect as well. So she's got that component down. But at the end of the day, she's just surrounded by art. And I mean, art in visual form, art in performance, writing, musically, singing, because my assistant is a singer. So she's pretty much cultivated in the world of all performance genres. She just has to decide what she wants to do, even as a producer and a director.
Yeah, yeah, of course.
Yeah.
There's a lot to choose from.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's awesome that she gets that, experience. It widens you. I mean, I grew up similarly like that, surrounded with a lot of musicians and artists of all kinds, and always going to rehearsals. It feels like my life was, I'm always in rehearsal. No, there's rehearsal. But it makes you, I think, a grounder person, human being.
Is that what it was for you? No, I'm curious to know what you got from that. Because, see, she's 8 years old, and she gets a little like, oh, we got to go do this again. And I teach her. I was like, yeah, but that's how you get good at something, right? The way you get good at something is you keep doing it over and over. And even though it gets a little boring and you know, repetitive, that's how you can become good at something. And so we're still working on that aspect, so I'm just curious as to...
Well, I think it's normal for kids to, you know, just feel impatient a little bit. But that's in general because you're a kid and, you know, you want to be here and you want to be there and you don't... But I think all in all, I think kids do get it. I mean, with me, I didn't really mind it. I did at one point want to quit ballet, and I was a very serious ballet dancer or dancer. And my mother was like, no, this is the price of discipline, and this is what you do, and this is what it is, and this is what you're going to learn, end of story.
How old were you?
I was about 12.
12?
Because my girlfriends were going to the parties, and I had a lot less of the parties.
Right.
Because I was always in rehearsal for something. And in the end, and in hindsight, when I became an adult and had to decide what to do with my life, I acknowledged my mother's, you're going to do what I say, because I know, and I know that it might not be fun, but this is how you pay your dues.
And so, interesting enough, like, my daughter is currently attending a progressive school. And originally, I had enrolled her into a charter school because they're a bit more rigid and structured, and I thought that would serve her better in creating a balance from our lifestyle because we lead somewhat of a bohemian, a contemporary bohemian, I want to say, because we do live in a high rise and we do have a beautiful view. We live in a glass tower overlooking Central Park and we have a concierge and a doorman and, you know, and that's like that metropolitan life, but we're artists and that's what I live and breathe. And so I thought that putting her in like a more rigid environment would not allow her to just be so free. And, you know, because I'm very like kind of like, hey, okay, we're going to do this today. All right, we'll do that today. You don't want to do it? All right, we don't have to do it. I'm very like that because I'm always in production mode as my occupation. When it comes to my personal life, I don't like to schedule. I don't, you know, I'd rather just kind of go with the flow because my whole life is scheduled. And so she attended the school for two grades, I want to say, kindergarten and first, and because she was in a preschool way before it became universal preschool. And she decided in first grade that she didn't want to go back. What was interesting was that I noticed that it was killing her spirit. Because when I transferred her into this school that she's currently in that she loves so much, and it's very multicultural and it's very arts related and it's all about the culture before the academics, her whole way of being, her eyes, everything about her just lit up. And sometimes I worry if I'm being too kind of free flow with her, you know, because I allow her to just be. And then I ask her, you know, I suggest you come to me and I'll help you make decisions. She's only 8 and that's how I rock with her. You know, I'm like, okay, so tell me what's going on. Who's doing what? Da, 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 da. I'm like, oh, well, then maybe next time, you know. And then I use big words and she's always like, Mom, you're doing it again. I'm like, what? She's like, I don't know what that word means. And I'm like, that's okay. Just tell me you don't know what it means and I'll define it for you. But she's an avid reader. So with that, she's going to go very far.
Yeah, that's definitely, I think it's a secret of a lot of things, mm-hmm. to be a good reader. Mm-hmm. So now let's go back. Thank you for sharing about your daughter.
No, thank you for asking, because you know I could go on and on and on.
I know you can. No, and there's a lot of subject matter to go through. But I want to go to you, to what you're doing, to what you do, which is so important, and go back to before that. Why do you start that, your program? And you've been acknowledging the Bronx all your life, I suppose, but I want to know how it started.
So I am originally from El Barrio. I'm born and raised. I'm from East Harlem, and I've always been into the arts. I thought I was going to find myself in movies before what I do now, and I relocated. I lived in California. I did the California thing for a couple of years, and I auditioned out there. I got on the Fresh Prince of Bel-Air while I was out there. I was residing. Mm-hmm. When I first moved out there, I was residing with the woman who played his mom.
Wrong.
Yeah, and she grew up with my mom. They went to high school together, so she accommodated me and my acclimating to California and that whole lifestyle. And so I felt really displaced out there. I was really saddened. There wasn't very many people like me out there. Nobody knew who I was. At that time, the only person they could relate me to was Rosie Perez. And while that's not an offense, it was just really, there was something disturbing to me about that because we didn't have a voice. We didn't have a voice, and that's all anybody could relate me to. And I was just being sent out on castings that didn't really suit me, or, I mean, what they call creative casting and so forth. So I came back to New York because my grandma was at almost towards the end. I mean, I didn't think she was going to pass like she did, but I came back to be with her up until she was, you know, transitioned on. And I ended up staying. I had put all my stuff in storage over there, and I ended up staying. I mean, the story is a lot more extensive of my travels through California, but I really want to get to how I ended up becoming a television host representing the Bronx and being the voice of the Bronx. And so when I came back, in staying with my grandmother, I had the opportunity to go back to school. So I went to a conservatory, and I was studying at the William Esper Studio. And I studied Meisner technique for the program is 2 years. And I did the master program. I was invited to do the third year. And I was, once again, one of the few Latinas in the conservatory. And so once again, I felt displaced and judged, and there wasn't a space for me. So that's when I started realizing that I can't rely on casting directors or producers or other people to book me, because they had their idea of what role I suited, or what voice I represented, or what look I represented. I mean, that's what casting is. You, after a while, you become numb, and you have to kind of remain objective. But I didn't like the withdrawals that I would go through getting booked, doing a gig, or being on a production, and then being off, and then not knowing where's the next job coming from. Like, how? Yeah, I just didn't even like the withdrawals. You know, the whole, oh, I've been on a production for like 7 weeks, and then boom, it's gone. And I was just like, I just couldn't take it after a while. And so I decided to start creating my own stuff. And while writing wasn't really my strong talent, somehow it was inevitable that it would feed everything else that I was creating. I've always considered myself more of a creator, producer than a writer, but you know, with time, I would end up having to write things, because I never had I've always enjoyed working collaboratively and with a team. And so I was given a residency at the New Eureka Poets Cafe, and it was from a show that I had created called Barriolesque, and it was an open mic. And I was the host, but my hosting style, I would have like all kinds of variety acts in there, belly dancers, sword swallowers, comedians, rappers, poets, I mean, you name it was in there. And what I would do is I would book each performer every month, and then I would weave the story around what everybody brought to the table. But my story would be separate from theirs. Like one time I was this robot, a humanoid named Robata, and I was selling real estate on Mars. You know, and I was telling my own story in a abstract kind of avant-garde hosting style. And Michael Maxnavi, the executive director of BronxNet, was there documenting with my late brother, Ibrahim Gonzalez, who I always give him a shout out and send him light, because he's the one that was like, no, you gotta come see this, you gotta come see this. And so Michael had visited a couple of times and was documenting, and he gave me this opportunity to host the Beta Awards together with Dr. Bob Lee from WBLS, and the timing was right. And they were just, I guess, cooking up the concept of open, and since Bob Lee and I had just co-hosted the Beta Awards, they offered both of us the position of co-hosting Open. And so Open was originally going to be a co-hosting show on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. But what ended up happening is they separated all of us, and they gave each show their own theme. Mondays is community, Wednesdays politics, and Fridays is arts and entertainment. And we were the pilot episode, and I've been the host of Open Friday ever since. It's going on 11 years now. Actually, I made 11 years in May. And it's been one of the most developing aspects of my life, because to some people, it's like, oh, she's working on public access. Why is she still there? But what they don't realize is that I'm actually learning every single time I'm there the different aspects of production. And it's my occupation. I get paid to do that. You know what a blessing that is? I get to just go in the studio. I'm not getting the mega bucks of the major networks. But the fact that my opinion matters and that I have some form of influence in who is seen. And, you know, I've come a long way from when I first started in being a space for us Latinos, for people of color.
Mm-hmm.
It took a lot for me to have the influence that I have now. A lot of people don't have no idea. And now it looks like it's very colorful in the sense that, yes, we are multicultural admirers and advocates, but it wasn't as such until the design of Open Friday really started formulating itself into a set format.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And something that you share with Javier Gomez, who's also doing his show in BronxNet, he, in his interview, he said something to me that made sense. And he said, Sol, I want to be here because local news is really important. What happens in our local, hyper, even local places is really important. And that's what everybody's losing across the nation. So for him, having that program in that little space is like, I don't want to change it. People ask me all the time, why don't I go to Telemundo? Or why don't... He works with that, but what he wants to focus is on the service that he does.
I enjoy, really, it is so fulfilling to me to be the space that our local artists are documented, and they're well-rounded artists, mm-hmm. you know, and sometimes we bring on amateurs because everybody deserves a chance, but they get to walk away with documentation of themselves professionally, and some of them will come to us, and then they'll, I don't know, win a Grammy a year later or so, and then they'll come back, and then they get to show us where they went. And to some people, I'm still in the same place. And, you know, I believe in divine intent. No, that's not the word. Divine, it's a timing. You know, I believe in divine.
Synchronicity?
I do believe in synchronicity, but just the divine timing, you know, like just that everything in its divine order. It's everything in its divine order because I continue to host Open and I've been blessed by BronxNet and to have such a tight-knit relationship with BronxNet that I started developing my own production, my own television show that is being produced under my production company. And I'm doing that at an entirely different location. And while there's an affiliation, it's kind of like, oh, she went somewhere. It could have been perceived that she went somewhere else, but I'm giving El Barrio some love because those are my origins. And I'm already a voice in the Bronx, so now I'm trying to expand it. But I'm being very clear about the fact that obviously I have a rough edge around me, and it's very clear that I am an urban, you know, I'm an urban Latina, and so I'm perfectly good with representing uptown, and so that's kind of like where I'm aiming. I'm like, yeah, I represent uptown, not just the Bronx, uptown, because there's an expansion going on. And while my show is not designed to solely serve El Barrio, neither shows, not even the Bronx, not even Open. I like serving artists who are who do edutainment, who have political undertones. I don't do much politics, but I like the undertone of, like, there's a message there. If you get it, you get it. And if you don't, you're entertained.
I like that.
Yeah.
So now let's go back to that space that when you started out 11 years ago, where was the landscape con los Latinos And how have you seen the space evolve to now? Because a lot has happened in a decade, I feel like.
Oh, my gosh. Has it? Tremendously. And it's been so refreshing, especially, I mean, during these trivial times, you know, with this hurricane. But I will say the one thing I've really taken into account is looking at how many of us are in positions of power and how I'm watching everybody come together and unite as one voice has been like really phenomenal. For me, I'm going, wow, it wasn't like that 10 years ago because it wasn't. And so from where I'm at, we, and even as a woman, and even still to this day, I just don't like to give it too much power because I'm not, I try not to focus on what's not working and try to overcome with the intent of saying, okay, I have to find another way. Because that's pretty much, it's a choice. You get to choose, right? You can either stay in the space of like, oh, that's not, you know, that's how they are. You stick to like what's not happening and then, you know, then that's pretty much what you're going to get, and that's what your story's going to be, and that's pretty much how you are going to perceive everything and anything. And so I try to, I observe it, I take it into consideration, and I go, okay, how can I find a way to get from here to there? And if I have to go around, and all with the intent of not losing integrity in the process, because that's what happens to a lot of people. There's a loss of integrity for the sake of just accomplishing or getting to, I don't know what that is, but with where I stand in my position and even more recently, I feel like sometimes I would like to be, excuse me, at a more prosperous level, and when I say prosperous, I mean monetarily prosperous. But I like the role that I've played, and I don't think I've made it even known that I play a really large role in opening up a lot of doors for a lot of people, and I just love knowing that I did that. That's it. I love knowing that I did that. I don't need the recognition. I don't need anybody to pat me on the back. I know what I'm doing because I'm doing it with that intent. So I would like to think that since I started, I have opened up the door for a lot of people. Thousands of people have come through my space. And, you know, while I'm not a santera, because I'm not, I'm a spiritualist, and as hija de Elegua, that is my purpose. So I live in my purpose.
What are you going to do now with the new program?
So the new program, which is named after me, is something that I think I started creating it in a state of panic because I was pregnant, and I knew that the salary in which I was living on wasn't going to be sufficient to feed another human being and to live comfortably. And so I went into panic mode. I mean, a lot has changed and, you know, things have gotten renegotiated and things of that nature, we'll say. But because I already set out to do something and I'm just designed that way, when I put something on paper and I say, this is what I'm going to do, I don't stop until I get there. And while it's taken me all this time to get to where I am now, the intent is really for me to design a show that allows me to show, be fully self-expressed. I mean, of course, with limitations, but fully self-expressed in the sense that I originate from, once again, doing performance artwork and doing like this avant-garde character style type of comedic. You know, I have all these other elements that I don't really utilize when I'm on air. And so people know me as this talk show host who's there, you know, sunshine and just kind of like giving every sprinkling light and on situations that people wouldn't normally know about and things. And I love serving as such, but I'm also a performer and I've always been a fan of like Carol Burnett and I Love Lucy and Bette Midler and Goldie Hawn. Like, those are my ladies. And so I wanted to design something that would allow me to go there. And so, but what I'm doing now is I'm trying to figure out how to merge that magic realism together with reality and spirituality and showcasing artists. So at this present moment, we are experimenting, is what I like to call it. Right now, we are at the stage of experimental television, and the ideal situation would be for my show to, for me to have a confident format. Like, right now, I'm playing around so much that I'm like, no, I don't want to get married to that. I don't want to get married to that. Because I found that open was seeping its way into my show because that's what I've been doing 11 years. And I'm like, no, that's not what I want to do. I want to have maybe a segment or allow that to be a possibility within the show. But that's not, and I don't want the show to be a skit-based show either. So at this present moment, we are doing what we call experimental television. And it does have skits. It has guest interviews. It does have musical acts. It has even bloopers in it. I mean, I'm working so closely with my editors that I have even the editing being an additional voice of humor inside. So the show is going to have a little bit more of a campy style because it's my flavor. I love campy.
I love campy too.
Yeah. Yeah. And so right now where we are, I love it. And
you said campy and I went to Twin Peaks back in 1990 or whatever, you know?
Yeah. Well, except, you know, it's not a series.
It's a talk show. I get it.
But I'm still playing around with it because I've had to wear so many hats. I mean, I'm still wearing many hats. Mm-hmm. And I know you know because you're in the production side as well. And we have anywhere from 8 to 9 episodes in the can. And we shot this last year and we're only rolling out the 5th one now because we got to work. We're working experimental. And what that means is that it's not a set. Like, okay, for this segment A, segment B, kind of like my show is already set. And so it's kind of, we just fill in the bones, you know, with the meat. But we don't have the bones. The skeleton hasn't been set up. It hasn't been because I don't know what I want it to be yet. And I also am still trying to figure out what audience I'm really trying to target because I'm very, very fulfilled this time around empowering women. That's my thing. And I take on a lot of mentees and I'm a mentor to many and I don't want to become like, I do speaking engagements and stuff like that, but that I don't want the show to be preachy or anything. I want it to have messaging with, political and comedic undertones. And so it's
a variety show.
It is a variety show.
Like
morphing itself.
That's fun. We don't have anything like that, really.
Well, guess what? Guess what's going to happen, which is why I'm so glad that we got to do this now. So the show, as I mentioned, we currently have 5 episodes. And the 5th one just went to Manhattan Neighborhood Network. So I shot the show at Manhattan Neighborhood Network's El Barrio Firehouse Station Studio, which is on 104th between Lex and 3rd Avenue. Mm-hmm. That's where my show is being produced. They're facilitating us. And so it airs on MNN first, and then BronxNet picked it up. So it re-cablecast on BronxNet on a different channel. And, you know, I try to make sure it's not at the same time that I air because I don't want to compete with myself. And so...
Fancy that.
I know. It's like so cool, right? And then Amherst Media picked it up as well, which these are all public access stations, but they're part of an alliance. And so I have associates in each of these networks, and so they pick it up, and so it's being rebroadcast on BronxNet, Amherst, and then somebody I've been working with for a very long time introduced me to Shay Bawn, and Shay Bawn, I haven't met her in person, but we had been chatting for quite some time, and she is the mom of Vince Vaughn. And she's in California, and she co-founded a network online called the Women's Broadcast Television Network. And I will be premiering my show for the first time online next Tuesday on the Women's Broadcast Television Network. And it will be online a new episode every other week. And they are pretty much really happy to have me because I'm pretty much the color that they have on the network.
Well, that's a good start.
Yeah.
For them, I mean.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
And congratulations to you.
Thank you.
And so what's it called? Rina Valentin?
No, the show. Valentin. The name of the show is called Colors of Rina.
Colors of Rina.
Colors of Rina. And
and are you writing it alone?
Yeah. It's kind of like this one comes, this one. Because I have to work with other people's schedules, my hands are all over it from a writing perspective. So, yes, I am. I mean, one episode I even wrote entirely by myself. But I have some co-writers who have written certain episodes. So Neda Martinez Sierra is one of my producers.
I love her.
And Sara Contreras is one of my writers. She's a comedian. And Victor Cruz, the comedian, he wrote a couple pieces starting with episode 5, and he became my director from episode 5 until 8.
That's so cool.
Yeah, so Victor Cruz is my director towards the latter part. Mm-hmm. Sara Contreras co-wrote some of the skits. She wrote some of the skits. She co-wrote some of the intros, outros, and stuff like that. It's a co-writing bill for like the first, I want to say, 3-4 episodes. I mean, she's still, you know, we're all still working together, but it's one of those things that we're kind of all working off of each other's schedules. I mean, she was so committed that at some point we were writing through FaceTime while she was in the Pacific Coast, and we were scheduling, but by the same token, I'm also very mindful and full of every occupations or their primary occupations in which, you know, they have to generate the funds to sustain themselves. And it's been quite refreshing to see or receive the support and reinforcement that can become somewhat questionable to want to put your hands up, because I'm experimenting and it's different. It's not the same as coming in and having something formatted and just knowing what you're going to do. We're playing so much that the first couple of episodes, you can tell that we were like all over the place. It's like, where are these people going with this? And I didn't want to air them, but I think it's going to be a really fun ride for people online to see the development. And what we're doing is we're going to enroll people into sending us feedback to help us figure out which is the best direction to see what interests them the most.
Interesting. And maybe through there find a network of women, right?
Yeah. And that's the other aspect of it. The show isn't really designed to just cater to women, but because I am a woman and I'm all about empowering women, and I'm really a big advocate for moms and mompreneurs, I didn't really design the show to cater to that audience. However, I'm not opposed to considering going in that direction, but it still has to have the elements that I want to express, which is the comedic, the spirituality, the social, the political undertone, you know, the social consciousness, all that. And to some, it's like, oh, well, that's not commercial television. And I'm like, we'll see.
Yeah, exactly.
We'll see. We'll see. We'll see. Because I have a very unique style that to some people is a little on the eccentric side, but I pretty much am conscious of what I'm doing. And what I mean by that is the responsibility of the messaging that I'm sending out into the airwaves. It's like I'm fun and I'm out there and I love laughing. I love having a good time. But I'm also mindful of my responsibility.
What about what you're going to say and what you're going to share and what kind of a role model and voice the few that we have out there?
Right. I mean, to some people, it's like, oh, you're like a journalist. And I'm like, well, you know, I don't really consider myself a journalist. I mean, obviously, I do journalism because I have to research everything. And I'm pretty versed and I comb through each individual or any topic that I'm covering. But I like doing the we took a course at Bronxnet called Peace Journalism. I like that approach. I like bringing the light out of the situations. I like sharing what the benefits are in situations, you know. I love being happy. And so that's it. You know, I'm like, I'm happy. So you be happy. Let's all be happy, you know. And obviously that doesn't necessarily pertain to every single thing. But even in like the hurricane, you know, I was distraught for so long because I felt paralyzed. I felt powerless. I felt like, oh my gosh, if I had so much money, I would be doing so much more. And then that's when I start beating myself up. You know, I'm like, oh, you know, look, you're not really focusing on that aspect of our existence, right? And then it becomes a question of like, and this is all internal dialogue, obviously. I'm sharing with you. It becomes a question of like, well, what's really important? What's really, really important? And then looking at what happened to Puerto Rico, what's really important? All the material stuff? No. Who cares? They can't do anything, right? And I'm not saying I wish that on anybody, but at the end of the day, like when we live and when we go, we don't take any of those things with us. And unfortunately, we live in a society that people deal with each other according to those factors. And our children are being raised with certain types of values that are geared towards material representation. I mean, it's just so. That's where the consciousness comes in, you know. And even in making or trying to be lighthearted about every situation. I mean, again, going back to Puerto Rico, it was very, very hard. And I'm going to share something with you. So Victor Cruz is my director, and he does these acting classes, and he thought it would be a good idea for me to take these acting classes that he offers on Tuesday night to be around other actors and so forth. And he gave us this exercise that was, he gave us certain topics we could choose from to design a monologue, to write a monologue. And one of them was, there was asteroids getting ready to hit Earth. So I wrote the story, I chose that topic, and I wrote the story based on an asteroid getting ready to hit Earth, heading for Earth, and it was an emergency situation. And so I had to perform this on Tuesday, get the class on Tuesday, and I was already feeling what was going to happen to Puerto Rico. And so I threw the subtext of what was going to happen to Puerto Rico in such a way, you can even almost say it was a premonition, that I was hysterical performing this piece about asteroids hitting Earth in a way that I just couldn't stop. I was hysterical because I saw what was coming. And so I thought maybe I was, you know, it was that time of the month for me. So I was like, oh, you know, it was very extreme. I was with the, you know, that kind of. And then when it happened, it hit me harder because it happened the way I saw it. And there wasn't much I could do about that. And I have been going nonstop, helping in whatever way I can to help in whether it's fundraisers, whether it's collecting, whether it's enrolling people to continue collecting, whether it's posting, whether it's like, I even have my daughter's school. I have the kids, you know, donating. They're distributing to the firehouse, whether it's... and so now I'm focusing on my family because my family is... They're pretty strong. They're pretty, you know, they can carry their own. But the supermarkets are scarce now. And so now I'm collecting to send to my family because this isn't going anywhere for any time soon. And so I'm sharing that with you. How did I even get there? I know you had asked me a question. It was just because I was just, it's just something I've been wanting to get out of my system because it was just really so deep and so, it's, I took it to heart. And I mean, like, I just, we're up against this dark force that is so visible to me. And because I believe in the power of manifestation through declaration, there's that consciousness that I'm just trying to transmit through the airwaves in my way of just being lighthearted, fun, and loving, and just going, hey, I know I look like a loquita, but, you know, trust what I'm sending you. Trust what I'm sending you. And that's really like where it's at right now with everything I'm doing, everything.
From the goodness of your heart.
Yeah, well, from the deepest place of my heart in just from the deepest place of my heart, being a transcendental meditator, okay? I'm a transcendental meditator. I transcend every single day for the past maybe a year and a half or something like that. And I'm a Buddhist as well, but I am a disciplined transcendental meditator. And I share this because I transcend every day. And in transcending, there's this awareness that happens in our existence. I'm speaking to you from an internal place of watching my mind have dialogue with my body in the battle that occurs while I'm transcending because they try to compete with each other. And so I kind of step out and I'm able to see. And then because I'm doing this and I'm practicing this so regularly, I have a different outlook of our existence in understanding that our bodies is just a shell. It's something bigger than that. We're something grander than that. And we're energy. And and because of that consciousness and the lack of consciousness or those who are in positions to kind of like spread it further or have a stronger influence, we'll say, it's really, it's exhausting. It's exhausting. Yeah. But because I have the ability and I am disciplined, I'm able to replenish. And that's the whole purpose of doing it. And while, again, going to my spirituality, which seems to, it's interesting that that seems to keep coming out in this conversation, because I don't really talk to people about it, and only people who have been in circles, you know, like in women's circles with me, or have done any facilitation, or have seen me facilitate, know that it's a huge component to everything that I do. And but I just share it and give it willingly, lovingly, because if you're here, it belongs to you. And that's the biggest blessing I carry being on air. Because when I'm talking to the camera, that's what I'm sending. And I got to tell you, my biggest fans in the Bronx are older women. Older women, the women who watch the novelas. They love me. They love me. And they let me know. Some of them are old enough to be my grandmother. And wherever they see me, they will run. And they will stop me. And it's just, there's just something about that that just really, really, really resonates on a whole nother level. Because these are elders. And I'm going, wow, they say I'm spunky and all that, but they and they tell me, they love you. They're like, I've been watching you for years, mamita. I see it, but yeah. So, and also.
That's beautiful.
It is beautiful. It makes me teary-eyed because these are souls who have been here longer, and to know that I connect with them, or they connect with me, it's an honor. It's an honor for me. It's an honor. It really is.
Yeah. Well, it's an honor for me that you've given me this time. No. Thank you.
Thank you.
We'll continue more. We'll have to have more conversations once your program. I've seen the program, the variety program, because I love that stuff. And we'll talk about them.
So I appreciate that. Thank you. Did we go in the direction that you wanted to? Because you just take me. You definitely put people in a trance here.
Yeah.
And I love it.
We talked about you. That's what I want.
And I appreciate that. It was really cool to have the role reversal.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.